How's it feel to win this Super Bowl in the building that your brother built?
You know what? It just feels good to win a Super Bowl. It doesn't matter where you are or what stadium. Indianapolis has been a great host for the Super Bowl. But, you know, I feel it's great for my teammates, my coaches, the Giants organization, for all the dedication they put in this year to make this happen.
Breaking news. Oh, my goodness. We have a whole podcast coming to you in a couple minutes, but we needed to come up here. Dan Hansis, along with Greg Rosenthal and Mark Sessler, to discuss Eli Manning, who was benched by the New York Giants. It became official on Tuesday afternoon. Geno Smith will start on Sunday against the Oakland Raiders. Ben McAdoo, in a statement, said, Geno will start this week. Over the last five games, we will take a look at Geno, and we will also give Davis Webb, the rookie third-round pick, an opportunity. Mark Sessler, we'll start with you. Let's unpack this. A real stunner for a Giants team. Eli Manning, yes, that was his second Super Bowl win that we talked about off the, or we heard on the top. And also, this team has been lost at sea, but Eli's always been the rock of this franchise, and all of a sudden, he's gone.
I don't know how you scapegoat Eli Manning for what has been an absolutely disastrous season for the Giants. My one reaction is this is a terrible look for the franchise. This news broke about, 45 minutes ago, and you already see that the reaction is viciously negative for the franchise. And it's easy to pin it on Ben McAdoo, but Ben McAdoo is a dead man walking who was put out here to make this look like he is part of the process. I'm not sure who made this decision and where it came from, how high up, probably very high up. But the fact is, this is about next year. The Giants are essentially in tank mode, and Eli Manning has been scapegoated unfairly.
He has, and yet, is he going to play for the Giants next year? Ben McAdoo said this is not the end of Eli.
Oh, please.
With the Giants.
How does he know?
Right. He is likely not going to be there. My feel, and you know, seems educated at this point, is that Eli Manning's not on the team next year. Is Geno Smith going to be on the team next year? Maybe. You know, maybe he'll be in that mix. Is Davis Webb going to be on the team next year? Yeah, he'll be on the team. Whoever made this decision, I don't know if they wanted to make a statement, if they wanted to see what they truly wanted to get some evaluation on these guys before making a decision. Jerry Reese, the general manager, is in the statement. He has a quote in the statement, so that right there is telegraphing that maybe he's part of that decision-making
product.
A decision like this goes up to ownership. Whether it starts there or not, who knows? But Eli Manning has started 210 straight games. The last quarterback to start for the Giants that wasn't Eli Manning is Kurt Warner. So it's crazy that it's Kurt Warner to Eli Manning to Geno Smith. So any decision like that, you would think is a permanent decision that's like, Eli is not part of our future. Let's start the future right now. We don't care about the brushback we're going to get.
It's stunning for someone from New York who has grown up. The Giants always make the right move, and especially when you're talking about one of the truly special players in franchise history. Eli owns every passing record the Giants. He has the two Super Bowl MVPs. This is one of the saints of the organization, and that's why the reaction is so visceral right now. And the cynical side of me is saying, why are the Giants doing this? Because Eli is not having a terrible year. He's surrounded by a beat-up team. He has no one to throw to. The offensive line stinks. It's a bad situation. So the cynical view for me is that the Giants, they already won a game they were surprised to win against the Chiefs. They are looking for a new quarterback, and they're taking Eli out of the mix and putting Geno Smith, which is another slap in the face, having Geno being the guy. It's not even the kid that you're playing. You're putting in Geno, and then the kid's going to play too. That the Giants want to go 3-13. They want to go 2-14. And if they make that decision, and this is where it would be really ugly, if they make that, if that's what they're thinking, they're looking ahead to the future of the franchise. That is so unfair to Manning and what he has meant to that franchise. He's been nothing but respectful to the organization his entire career. He's delivered. He plays every day. He plays hurt. and to just take the rug out from him. Let's listen to what Eli said in the locker room with the reporters. And he's so emotional, and you could probably pick it up just by listening. But he's on the verge of tears. So obviously this is hitting him really hard. Let's listen in.
That's hard. Hard day to handle this, but hang in there and figure it out.
What's the hardest day as a Giant, you would say?
It's up there, yeah.
Do you feel like you might have started your last game for the Giants?
It's hitting you emotionally.
That's hard. Hard day to handle this, but hang in there and figure it out.
What's the hardest day as a Giant, you would say?
It's up there, yeah. Yeah.
Do you feel like you might have started your last game for the Giants?
I don't know. I don't know. I'll take one week at a time.
Last one, guys.
Have you spoken to anyone besides Ben about the decision, Jerry or John or anyone like that?
Spoke with Jerry Reese a little bit, and Mr. Mara had he hadn't been in today, and but he knows what's going on, and try to speak with him tomorrow sometime.
Appreciate it, Eli.
I think you have to listen to that, and then if you can go find it, it's on my timeline. It's all over the Twitter. You have to go watch the look on his face. It's the look of he's about to break down, and I think, honestly, it reminds you at this point, if you're Eli Manning in your career, of your mortality, that your career, just like your brother, you are a Manning, but you can be benched. Just like Brett Favre, your career can end with a benching. And I understand that they want to move on, and I think that, if anything, Eli Manning talked about the fact that he didn't want to ceremonially start these games.
They offered that.
Right, they offered, we'll have you start to continue your streak, but then have Geno Smith and Davis Webb come in. He said, no, I think that, if anything, it's not that they've moved on from Eli, they have, but he is going to move on from them. This is I don't care about analyzing Geno Smith over the next five games, which you don't need to do right now anyways. You literally do not, if you're the Giants, with an entirely fresh crew coming likely. And Davis Webb, there's time for that. This is going to, none of that will override how disgraceful of a move. This is going to go down in New York sports history as one of the uglier moments for the Giants. I really believe that.
I think it'll be mostly forgotten. Because
mostly forgotten?
I really do, because this is how almost every tell me how it ended for Dan Fouts in San Diego. Tell me
that's
how
that's San Diego. This is right. New York City with the story Giants.
It ends ugly.
How many rings for Dan Fouts? Do you know the impact of winning a Super Bowl in New York? The impact of winning two, the impact of both being against the Patriots and Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. This guy is a legend.
It'll go down as an ugly end.
Sometimes you don't see that, Greg. Honestly, I feel like you downplay what Eli has meant to that franchise.
He has meant
and that's
everything.
That's why this is bigger than Dan Fouts.
Of course. It is a seismic moment, not just in New York, but in the NFL, to see kind of one of the Titans in – just that he was there every week. And I think that's why it hurts him so much. He took pride in being there every week. It's an amazing achievement that he started that many games. What I guess I wanted to say was every end is ugly. And this is going to be ugly. People are going to remember the good things about Eli Manning. Because if they didn't bench him, here's what would be remembered. Eli Manning was piloting a dead ship, and he's not a good quarterback now. I know he's having a better year than a year ago, but he was one of the worst three or four quarterbacks in the league a year ago. He's coming off a game where he averaged 2.5 yards per attempt, and I think that game is really important to remember. That was one of the worst games we've seen a quarterback play all season, and that was a game where you can't blame it on the offensive line or the running game, where Eli Manning was having one of his worst performances. Now, maybe that's not fair.
But the thing people aren't going to remember. The game he played 2 weeks ago.
This week, I'm saying that I think ownership and maybe the general manager looked at that and they said, what are we doing here? And that was part of the impetus to replace
him. So they put Geno Smith in?
Well, Geno,
what does that solve?
What if you had Patrick Mahomes sitting behind Eli Manning? I think you'd have a completely different reaction. You know what? We totally honor what Eli's done, but we do have the future sitting behind him. You are putting Geno Smith into the lineup.
It's disrespectful to bench him at all, and that I get. And I don't think ultimately is it worth doing that. It's probably not. But we don't need to hear anything about tanking or about maybe it makes their team worse. They scored 3 points on offense last week. They are 31st in the league in points scored. They're not going to get worse on offense in particular. They could just stay equally as terrible.
Let's see how Davis Webb plays with this line and these weapons on offense, if you can even call them weapons. It's And I don't think his career is over either. I think it ends the chapter just like his brother. It ended in Indy, and it ended a little messy in Indy too. But he had a chance to rewrite or write a final chapter, and that's going to happen somewhere probably. I don't imagine he'll retire. It doesn't seem like that's
going to happen. I don't think he will.
And maybe Jacksonville, a lot of people think makes sense. But he will be in the NFL most likely, just not with the Giants. And that is a huge story this season.
It could be the Jets. You never know. I think that we're all feeling emotional because we're watching someone that we've watched every Sunday for 1,000 Sundays in a row play, a guy that the first Super Bowl we went to, Dan, was Eli Manning knocking off the Patriots. We heard that sound clip at the top of this. And I simply, like, growing up listening to New York sports radio, this does feel like a big moment in New York to me. And I just can't get behind with the Giants, a team that you can always count on them to make pristine decisions. This feels sloppy, and it's unclear where it came from. It did not come from Ben McAdoo, so they're hiding where it came from, in my opinion.
This is a very strange time for the New York Giants. And we're seeing that right now, how this is played out.
Right. It couldn't really be any uglier, and it's a shame that Eli Manning's run and the Giants is ending that way. I think this year has been ugly and unfortunate for him and his time. They're really the last 2 years. I know they went to the playoffs, but I think, you know, last year he wasn't the same guy that we saw earlier in his career.
All right, so that is the Eli Manning news. We got a lot more to get to, and Connie Fox is going to join us, so let's get to it. The Tuesday Show.
Weird.
Around the NFL podcast. Hey.
Welcome back, Scandalous. Another edition of the Around the NFL podcast presented by Head & Shoulders. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room filled with heroes. Mark Sessler, Colleen Wolf betrayed in the big spot, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, people?
I don't even know what to say at this point. Money already
said it. It's been said for you. Yeah.
Well, consider it an homage, like Dan with his Chris Berman.
That's true, but did you file any trademarks? Then Money, who's got a lot of jobs. Money has a lot of money.
Wait, you actually went through the process of filing a trademark? I find that tough to believe.
Well, I'm lying, but maybe I should.
Let's look into that.
Yeah.
Because think about it. Money, he works at NFL Network, mm-hmm. on-camera talent. That's probably pretty good. The voice of the Chargers.
Yeah.
Not bad at all. And he's also one of the most popular sports radio talk guys in the second biggest market in America.
He's the number one show. That's his
number
main
one.
Job.
So,
how does he have time to do anything? Like, that's crazy.
Add it all up. Lawyer up, Connie Fox.
Okay.
I mean, what's his nickname?
Money.
I mean, the guy has got financial gravitas.
Nice gravitas reference in a big spot.
I love on the shows that he's on, like the font actually says Money, Matt Money Smith, right. And it's in quotes.
Yeah.
Now, that's a guy that gave himself his own nickname, Dan. There is hope for you.
Is that true?
I'm assuming that.
I don't hope. I feel like old Zeuser kind of took. Mm.
Well, you should start asking
there been others,
to put Dan Old Zeuser Hansis
that's all right.
on the font.
This is the Tuesday edition of the Around the NFL podcast jam-packed show. So let's get through what we're going to be talking about today. Monday Night Football, Ravens versus Texans, a game that will be remembered for a long time.
Oh, my God.
Well, for the next 24 hours we'll talk about that. Also, this is a fun one. Fulton, get ready. Hot takes destroyed.
Yeah. Whoa. Oh, my God.
I love it.
It's destruction. So, yeah, we'll get into that.
That was a hot take artist who just went down.
Yeah, burned alive.
Perhaps one in this own building.
And, at the end of the show, a special announcement regarding hashtag ATNCat.
Oh, my God. Look at that little one.
Oh, yeah, some hot cat talk.
Cat talk.
Can't
meow.
Wait for a little pussy cat talk. But before
all right.
What? Let's do a little Monday Night Football recap.
Weddle hanging up closer to the line. Tony Jefferson deep for the Ravens
defense.
Thought
you were a cat person. That's
Savage throws across the middle. It's intercepted. Anthony Levine at midfield. He'll take it down at the 42-yard line. And with 2:16 left to play, the Hayes in the barn.
I like Hayes in the Barn guy. That's Sandusky of the Ravens radio network. The Ravens forced 3 turnovers, including 2 in the final 5 minutes of gameplay. Tom Savage, no match for this savage Baltimore defense. A 23-16 win for the Ravens on Monday night. Ravens team that, by the way, let's give them a little credit as a, you know, a primetime juggernaut. I think they've won 10 in a row with the lights
on. Jim Harbaugh, yeah.
Anyway, wow. So the Ravens get a big win, 6-5. They are in the AFC playoffs right now. Greg, they took care of business. Not an overwhelming effort, but they did it again.
They got it done. They're a strange team, and I've been saying they're the favorites to make the playoffs, and I won't back off that. And yet, I don't think you can just lock them in. When you're struggling at home against this Texans team, when Tom Savage looks like the better quarterback for much of this game against your quarterback, that's a problem. And they don't really have a pass rush. So they're a good defense. I don't think they're a great defense. Like, how good can you be as a team if you don't really have a passing game and you don't really have a pass rush? I know they got some pressure late in the game after a tackle for the Texans went out, and you're playing one of the worst offensive lines. But it's a team with holes. It's just a team that kind of knows how to win these ugly games.
You talked about Baltimore versus Pittsburgh's defense on a previous show, how too many times you see a team roll right down the field against Baltimore. Doesn't happen 5 times in a game, but it happens enough. And it happened early in this game with Savage looking good out of the gate with an opening drive. I mean, clearly the Texans have their own issues on offense. But for me, the Jadeveon Clowney in this game, DeAndre Hopkins, these were the stars of the game, and they couldn't pull out a win. If you're Baltimore, you are watching Joe Flacco's career crumble into dust. The centerpiece of their offense is Alex Collins right now. They have watching him miss on deep throws over and over. This was a really rough showing by their offense.
It's really hard to watch.
John Gruden even was calling it out. Flacco doesn't look good, and he's known for that arm. And at a certain point, it was like a round peg square hole where he's just like chucking the ball downfield.
Like, hey, I still have a strong
arm. I can throw it far. Is that good enough? But there's just not a lot of juice to this offense. But yeah, I think it's a very good defense. You don't think this is a dominant defense?
Well, I think too, like during the broadcast, you heard John Gruden. I'm pretty sure he said that Sam Cook was like, in not these words, but he was basically the offensive star of the night. Like, he provided the biggest spark for that offense, and that's the punter, like with that fake punt. Are you kidding me?
Right.
I can't get behind this.
They need those calls to win games, I think.
Right. When you have an offense this bad, you get your punter to pick up a big first down. You go for it on fourth down, which was a really key spot in the second half, and they ran the ball and they picked up the first down. You run the ball on 3rd and 8 and sometimes pick it up. There was a sequence when they were trying to hold on to the lead. Texans were very much in it, where they had a 3rd and 2 where Flacco threw the ball short of the sticks, punted away. They get the ball back. Their defense holds up. They have a 3rd and 10 where he throws a completion for a no gain. So they're throwing 1 yard passes instead of even trying to pick up first downs. I don't think it's a great defense. It's an okay defense.
Well, the defense has so many penalties,
it's
too. That's the other thing. They need to clean that up. I think 6 of the 7 penalties that the Ravens had were on the defense.
To Dan's point, though, I think it has the earmarks of becoming a dominant defense, because as Gruden pointed out,
and the pass rusher, though, they don't have any pass.
But they have a lot of, they like Gruden pointed out, and I totally agree with him. You see it every week leading up to this. The second year wave of players that they have, they've got a lot of young guys. And no teams in the AFC develops defensive players better than the Ravens.
And we should move on, but DeAndre Hopkins just deserves a little love. You mentioned
incredible.
Yeah. He might be a first-team All-Pro. I mean, he destroyed Jimmy Smith's Pro Bowl campaign one night. He destroyed Patrick Peterson a week ago. The fact he's getting it done with Savage, who made some nice throws, also killed them with interceptions. That was the difference. His turnovers. Like, Hopkins has just taken it to another level.
Did you see him walk into his press conference and no one was there, and so he walked back out?
Tom Savage?
Yeah.
It's depressing.
He probably lucked out with that, to be honest.
Walked up, stood at the podium, and then was like, all right.
Terrell Suggs, 9.5 sacks now, 35 years old. He is the other modern marvel along with Tom Brady. That guy can get to the quarterback. So it pays for like 15 sacks.
He can. I don't think on a down-to-down basis, and that was on the third-string tackle, and a couple of those last night, for instance, were just totally unblocked. He's a solid player. I think as a team, they would admit that that's like a weakness there.
And they smell the ball. They have an NFL-best 26 turnovers, so an opportunistic defense. There you go. So the Ravens are now 6-5 and in good position in the AFC playoff picture. Let's move on and do some news.
Bam, bam, bam. In your face.
All right, let's start with a little suspension talk. We love suspension talk. Hopefully this one won't go to like 450 courts, and a woman that's a judge will go to the Poconos for a couple of weeks, and we don't have to deal with that kind of stuff. That wasn't fun. But the Broncos and Raiders got into that big brawl on Sunday that started when Michael Crabtree had his chain ripped off his neck for the second time in as many years by Aqib Talib. And the league announced that both players will be suspended 2 games for their roles in that scuffle. Both players will appeal the suspensions, according to Rap Sheet. The bans are a result of violations of unsportsmanlike conduct and necessary roughness rules during the game. It happened in the first quarter, and that's what surprises me, Connie Fox, is 2 games and maybe it gets knocked down to 1 on appeal. That seems to happen a lot. But they already kind of missed an entire game because of this. Now you're taking them out of the action for potentially three full games. That's a little surprising.
That's a lot. I mean, the
sending a message, certainly.
Sure. And I mean, as you're saying all of that, we're watching the replay, the highlights, I guess you could say, of the fight. And it's like I can watch this over and over and over again. And
I know. That's
not what the NFL wants, but it was so ridiculous to watch this happen. And it's just you never know what the NFL is going to hand down in terms of punishment.
Well,
it just seems like
it's pretty unprecedented.
It's unusual, A, to get ejected and then to have a suspension follow. That doesn't often happen. But I think the word here is premeditated. And Dan mentioned it. Dan, you nailed this on Sunday night when you felt that Michael Crabtree probably knew that something was up with his little necklace going into the game, and it clearly was. Premeditated actions like this is what the NFL does not want going into any contest.
What Mark is referring to is a report from Adam Schefter of ESPN. I think we have the tweet if we could bring it up for the video show. Raiders wide receiver Michael Crabtree taped his chain to himself before Sunday's game, knowing he was facing the chain-snatching Broncos cornerback Aqib Talib, and Talib still got it. Yeah, that's what I was talking about on Sunday. He's like, he's staring at the middle. He's like, I'm going to wear the chain. And then he's like, maybe I won't wear the chain. But he's like, well, if I don't wear the chain, then he wins the battle before I even get on the field. So what I'll do is I'll tape the chain. So it was in his head.
I don't think we gave you enough credit for your crystal balling of that one.
Yeah.
And just think about it. Aqib Talib already wins. Aqib Talib already owns that chain because Mike Crabtree is in the locker room staring at the mirror with like masking tape or Gorilla Glue, whatever he was using to keep that chain from like flashing in Talib's face. Didn't work. How's Crabtree's mind on the game on any level? Talib is a master tactician of brain warfare.
He has accepted he just cost himself.
What is brain warfare?
More than $1 million.
Psychological is what I wanted to say.
There you go.
Literally just took a million, I think $1.25 million is what he earns in 2 game checks, and he just set that on fire for being basically a child. And the Crabtree and Talib suspensions, I think, happened because if they weren't suspended, they were just going to fight. Every time they ever play.
In this scenario,
maybe it gets reduced down to 1, but like at some point it's like, we get it, guys. You guys are just going to fight every time you play. You kind of have to stop them from doing that. And it's incredibly, I guess you could say, selfish, because the Raiders are terrible in terms of their receiver position, their third and fourth receivers. They're still in the playoff race and they're losing Crabtree. Like, that's a big loss.
And Amari Cooper.
He was not thinking about any of that, you know, when he was.
When you have Marshawn Lynch as the most mature person in the situation, this is something that's completely out of hand.
That's fair. And yeah, my final thought on it is when they do face each other again, Crabtree's going
to
wear the necklace again.
He has
He's
to.
Gonna
he has
away
to.
With
He's
it
in too
time.
Deep now. He's in way too deep.
I would just layer up. I would wear as many as possible.
Wearing the chain was like his "these colors don't run" moment.
I would put more tape. I mean, I would
down.
Just do layers and layers and layers of tape. I'm talking thick, like packing tape over this.
He really had no choice. If anything, taping it on was almost, you're right, kind of caving into Talib, because he wears a chain every game.
It was a half measure.
That's his tradition. That's his routine.
Like, to him.
And if he was just about to do it. And he's like, no, I can't wear it because of Talib. It's like you did already lose.
He took some of his agency. I wrote about that on the end around. Please check it out. Let's move on. Mike Tomlin. Oh, Mikey Tomlin. He is, you know, I like this because Mike Tomlin's, he's not giving the typical coach speak. He feels that this upcoming massive Titanic matchup that's coming in week 15 between the Patriots and Steelers, it will likely, you don't know what's going to happen, but it has a good chance of determining who has home field advantage throughout the AFC playoffs. And Tomlin was speaking with Tony Dungy. This is a good move by NBC because to get these guys to say anything, set them up as somebody that has a lot of history with
them.
I think Dungy started Tomlin's career.
Oh, yeah. And Dungy, not only that, said, don't, before it started, he said, don't give me the coach speak answers. He was like, come on, give me the real answers.
I love it.
Dungy is a broadcasting pro if there was one ever.
I don't want to go that far, but you were also being sarcastic. So
no, I think he's – and this was a step forward in Dungy's broadcasting career. Let's
he's
put it that
way. He's a little vanilla. I think that's – to be blunt about it. But in this case, nice job, Tony. Here's what he said. Here's what Tomlin said. I'm going to embrace the elephant in the room. The game, referring to that Week 15 tilt, is going to be fireworks, and it's probably going to be part one. That's going to be a big game. But probably if we're both doing what we're supposed to do, the second one is really going to be a big game. Then what happens in the first is going to set up the second one, which is going to determine the location of the second one. I've been saying this. I'm not a genius or anything, but I've been saying this all year. All the Steelers' chances, going back to this training camp, was to get a better record than the Patriots or somehow have the head-to-head tiebreaker, because I don't think they have a chance in Gillette in the last in that playoff game, but we'll see.
And I love him saying all this to Tony Dungy, and it is a window into how different the Patriots and the Steelers organizations are, because I don't even think Bill Belichick, not only would he not say this, I genuinely...
Well, he wouldn't do the interview to start with.
Right. I genuinely... He does interviews with Tony Dungy. He just doesn't say anything. I don't think he honestly would believe this. And maybe it's not a big deal, but maybe this is kind of the reason why the Steelers go out on the road and they stink it up against bad teams.
Because what?
You take on the personality of your coach. He is saying, basically, we're going to the AFC Championship game. We should, you know, that's basically what he's saying. He's like,
right, but after the interview, Dungy, yep. They said they made the same point. Why is he going on here, Mike Tomlin, and saying all this? This is too much. Why are you putting your team in this position? Dungy said, look at. The Patriots have been good for two decades. Right. When I was a coach with Indianapolis, I saw it the same way. There's no way that you don't see New England sitting down there.
Sure.
They're the one on the top of the mountain. Belichick doesn't have to look down the mountain at the Houston right. Texans and the Pittsburgh Steelers and all these teams. He doesn't have to think
I
that
love
way.
That he said this. I love that we finally got to hear like some yep. honesty, and he was complete. He's
But is it probably going to be part one? If I'm a Steelers fan, I don't know if it's probably going to be part one. I think there's...
Well, it's part one. We don't know if there'll be a part two, and I'm not sure there will be.
That was the part that struck me, was the part two part.
Yeah.
Now, this is just part one. The big game's going to be the second one.
By the way, part two might end the way every other part two seems to end when the Steelers play the Patriots, so let's calm down a little.
Finally, the Indianapolis Colts are having a tough season. They are... On the outside looking in the playoff picture, a number of difficult losses where they just – we just talked about it on Sunday's show, Greg. You brought it up, how many near misses they've had, and they could really be in the playoffs if they closed out some games. But they haven't, so they're not really in the mix. And you add to the fact that Andrew Luck has missed the entire season. Tough year for Chuck Pagano, who probably won't survive this. Good chance he is one of the coaches that goes on Black Monday, which, by the way, Black Monday – is on New Year's Day this year. Is that
great?
Accurate?
Perfect. Mm-hmm. For anyone strapped to a news desk, that will be a celebration.
I mean, we're all kind of aged out of like wild New Year's Eve shenanigans, but the NFL is making sure we're buttoned up this year. It's like we'll do 16 games on Christmas Eve and your cute little podcast that will take you later into the night. And then the next morning, get up because it's Black Monday, bitch.
Well, the only thing that might help us a little, because I feel like the whole concept that all of this, oh, it's 10 a.m. on Monday, let's start firing everyone. We hear about 80% of these moves beforehand now.
Yeah.
Or after.
It comes out throughout the week. You're right. Although I think it's been a long time. I mean, I feel like New Year's Day is always an NFL day. Or it has been for many years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Chuck Pagano has had a tough season, and he's at his Monday presser. He seemed loose. He seemed almost a guy that maybe was resigned to his fate and was just shooting from the cuff. Some of these sayings are escaping me.
If you're shooting, it's from the hip.
That's where the gun is coming from.
The cuffing, off the cuff.
The gun isn't necessarily related to the cuff. It's coming off the hip where the holster is.
Shooting from the hip.
There you go.
You keep your guns in your cuffs.
But if you're shooting from the hip, that means you just like you don't care.
Yeah, it's kind of like
off
this.
The cuff is more like imagine. What I was trying to
yeah,
say.
You know, you're just doing it from down there. You're just kind of like bam, boom.
That's how
I shoot.
Wow.
All right. Anyway, here's Pagano. Here is what I call a monologue from Pagano. Some people might say it's a meltdown. I don't think that's fair. Here is Chuck Pagano's monologue about when asked by a reporter if he's concerned that all these losses will lead to some type of mental blockade for his team.
Yeah. Yeah, that song we played, you know, woke up to that this morning. Is that Sonny and Cher? Huh?
I got you, babe. Groundhog Day. Asked about was this Groundhog Day?
I got you, babe.
Right, right.
Yeah, went down, got my coffee, said hello to the what's-her-name, the little gal in the coffee shop.
It's a little
stole
gal.
The money out of the back of the truck, drove my truck off the, you know, into the tar pit or whatever,
oh
off the landfill.
Oh, no.
Jumped off a building, lived through it. Did you see the movie? Did you ever see the movie, Groundhog Day?
Been a long time.
What do you guys do? You spend so much time on Twitter, you're not enjoying the better things in life.
It's a great movie.
Bill Murray,
enjoying
come
the better
on.
Things like jumping off buildings.
I jumped off the roof at my home this morning.
I would like him
still
to recap like, any type
I'm not,
of movie.
It's not going
that
away.
That was a great summary of the movie Groundhog Day.
He did an excellent job.
No, it's everybody. You guys.
He's still going too.
It's the fans. I mean, it's everybody driving up there. It's everybody in the NFL community. Okay.
I hope he's
There's
okay.
There's a storm in the Atlantic.
No, he's fine.
Here's
Hurricane,
he just doesn't care anymore.
Whatever you want to call it.
Here comes the storm.
Winds are going to hit
landfall.
This is
where he lost me a little bit.
This is kind of like Hurricane Pagano in general.
You know, it's coming. Yeah. It's third quarter, middle of the third. It's getting late third. They're up 10. Got to happen sometime. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy right now.
Okay, so the hurricane is them blowing leads.
Hmm. Yes.
Okay. Got something. It. I follow.
It is. And what's got to happen is, you know, being
Keep
in
going,
Miami
Chuck.
For 6 years, when them storms start coming
Africa.
Off. The coast of Africa, and then it's coming through the Atlantic, and they start coming
Africa
up. What
reference.
Happens is you get, if you get a nor'easter, right, you get a storm up top.
So now he's at the
here,
Miami
done,
weather,
weather
pattern.
Before.
Right.
Everybody has a buddy that's
huh?
way more
Who's
into
Who's done
weather,
weather before? That's,
yeah.
That was my
who
favorite.
Was
yeah. Who's the best dude down there doing weather or dudette? Huh?
Oh my God.
Dudette.
Yeah, so when it comes
when
down,
he starts talking
that,
about the storm
pressure
bands,
hits,
that's
right,
my
and
favorite.
It pushes the storm where?
Nobody knows,
back out
Chaz.
To sea, right? And it goes up the coast, and there's very little damage. Those rings that spins this way, and those bands up top are the
bands,
most
the
egregious
bands.
Bands. They're far enough
the
out
most
where nobody
egregious
hurt.
Bands.
So when this starts to happen, film your tail off. I love it.
What?
You got to respond.
What? You know? And I like
you
tried to bring it back.
We need a storm to blow in and push that. So it doesn't hit land.
I feel like
so now he wants the storm.
We're gonna do it.
I've been there.
The storm's coming, but they need to push back. I don't know.
Mark, you had a stern face throughout that press conference.
I,
your thoughts.
Two words: sleep deprivation. But I come out of it. It is funny, but I feel a little concerned for the guy. Like if I were one of his children, I would be right on the phone to dad asking, "Are you okay?" Because it's like something was not right about that. We've watched 1,000 press conferences from him, and I just think that we're going to find out that something's not all right there.
Agree to disagree.
I know no one agrees with me. I guess.
Yeah,
no, I actually agree with you.
Because
I do.
It all like at the beginning he's recapping Groundhog Day. It's a bit. I mean, that no one really got the bit in the room, I don't think. Maybe a couple of the older guys did. You know, that was a bit. There was nothing weird about it. It just didn't totally land. Once he got into the weather thing, I wasn't sure like where that was going in terms of his overall.
It was
point.
Like a nervous public speaker, though, completely spinning out of control. But he's spoken in public 7,000 times. So I am baffled by the performance.
The reporters
really manic.
The reporters who know him well and are around him every day actually believe he's having fun in the last 2 or 3 weeks.
He's having fun?
He knows where he is. He's going to get fired. And that he basically doesn't care anymore. That he's just like...
He's Dennis Miller at the end of the Dennis Miller show.
He's being who he is. Like, that is Chuck Pagano. He's a little loopy.
All right, dude and dudettes, let's move on. Good job, Chuck. Have some fun out there, Chuck. That's good.
The storm bands. Anybody out there do weather?
I like the assumption that the sports reporters in the room have a weather background.
Sure.
Right.
If you cover anything, you cover everything.
All right. That's what's happening in the news. All right. Now it's time. Oh, yeah. We teased it. Oh, one last thing of news before we move on. Greg, you owe some sandwiches because Darrelle Revis signed with the Chiefs. We didn't get a chance to talk about that last week.
Uh-oh.
Okay. But It was a bit of a instant karma scenario because you threw some shade at me, some skyscraper shade on Twitter that I was going to be making some sandwiches, and Darrelle Revis got a job. And he got a, even though it's a, we got banged on the Connor Orr multi-year contract sandwich wager he made that we all took him on because it's not a real multi-year deal. Good job by Connor.
Yeah.
Who kind of roped us in with that.
He had us one as well. It was karmic payback. Mark randomly threw it. Threw a tweet out there.
Very randomly.
That Darrelle Revis was just walking along a river. Like, what is he doing?
No, I just said that he's with $6 million in his pocket. He's sort of floating along the Hudson River doing whatever he wants. Not any, no need to work. And right. Nor did I would think he would ever have been signed this year based on the whole contract.
And then I responded.
You responded.
I responded saying, yeah, maybe he's going to pick up some of those sandwiches. And the next day.
Who's he? Pronoun.
Darrelle Revis is going to pick up those sandwiches for me. The very next day. He gets signed. So that hurts
insane.
Me. I mean, it doesn't hurt as much as it hurts the Jets to be paying him $5.5 million to play against them this week, but it hurts.
Yeah, like the Jets scared. They actually made out on this.
Oh, yeah.
They made like $300,000 on
it. They made out great. They gave him one of the worst contracts in the last 10 years.
He can hang out with Brock Osweiler and talk about found money.
Here we go. You know, you lose a sandwich bet and then you try to turn around into Jets flaming.
Yeah. It's a pretty good tactic.
Good job. Way to go. I'll enjoy your sandwich. Let's now move on to, oh, yeah, Hot Takes Destroyed.
It's really, that's disturbing.
I find that enjoyable.
Really, I feel like that guy's in the same room as the hot butt guy.
That was actually Chuck. Together. That was Chuck Pagano in his shower. This morning.
That would just make you giggle. You thought of that.
Okay. All right. Anyway, Hot Takes Destroyed. What we're going to do is what's some popular thoughts, logic out there in the football cognoscenti. And we're going to really destroy those hot takes. And we're going to start with you, Greg Rosenthal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we're going to mix it up here. Keep you on your toes. What hot take would you like to destroy as we head down the home stretch of the 2017 regular season?
The hot take I want to destroy is the Russell Wilson for MVP bandwagon that is starting up. Mm. Hey, like I know you guys are really into, you know, Tom Brady and Carson Wentz, but Russell Wilson to me is more valuable than to his team than anyone else. Like he is carrying, he needs to be in the conversation. First of all, you don't need to have a conversation. You only vote for one player. You don't vote for five players. In the conversation is nonsense. When you have two players that are far and away the best two players in the league, you don't need to have a conversation. You don't need to come up with like another cute sort of like, hey, bet you didn't think of this. It's Russell Wilson. Like, he's really doing it this year. Like, this is how we end up with Derrick Rose for MVP over LeBron James in the middle of his prime. Woo. This is how we end up with, I don't know, Crash as the best Oscar winner. Like, you don't need
That movie.
You don't need to come up with, like, a clever reason. And the whole reasoning here with Russell Wilson, it's like, who's more important to his team than Russell Wilson?
Who's more valuable?
Who is more valuable to his team? I'll tell you. Tom Brady's more valuable. Like, of course Tom Brady's more valuable. Him and Carson Wentz are having two of the best seasons any quarterback's had in the last 10 or 12 years. Like, Russell Wilson's season is not even in the ballpark of that. Russell Wilson has had two or three games. He's having a great year. He's number three, I think, in the league. So it's not, you know, destroying Russell Wilson. The other two guys have been great week after week after week. People are like, well, you know, he doesn't have an offensive line. Like, he's not being helped. Like,
exactly.
Okay.
Or running game.
Mm-hmm. Or a running game. That's absolutely true.
He is the offense.
He is. He does have a defense, and he does have a very good.
Kind of.
I mean, he, like,
well, he has, did have a
secondary.
He has a very solid defense over the course of the season, and they're fine. He does have a good wide receiver group. How about make your offensive line better? Like, people say, like, okay, like, you have to make your teammates better. You don't think Tom Brady
has
made Ted Karras and Nate Solder and all those guys better because of what he does as a quarterback? Like, he makes them better. He makes Danny Amendola better. He makes Chris Hogan better. Russell Wilson makes his receivers better, too, but that's a great group of receivers. Look at the receivers when they leave Seattle. Golden Tate, Jermaine Kearse. Like, those are good players. Russell Wilson's incredible, but I don't think there's any way you could look at on a week-to-week basis he's anywhere in the same ball.
I'll give Greg this. It's not a straw man. A week ago, the NFL's Twitter account tweeted out Russell Wilson equals MVP with some chit chat. And your boy, Evan Silva, days ago tweeted the same thing. That's his MVP vote. So it's not a straw man, I'll give you that.
Yeah, I've seen it a lot.
I mean, the amount of scrimmage yards that he's 82.5% of scrimmage yards on Seattle's offense. That is what he is accounted for. That's the highest amount of.
Yeah, he doesn't have a running game.
Does it all.
But that's what that is, and it is kind of a tired cliche of a conversation. Like, all right, but who's the most valuable? And let's best case scenario for the Seahawks, they win out and go 11-5, and Wilson plays out of his mind. It ends up with 36 touchdowns and 700 yards rushing and 8 touchdowns on the ground. That type of like monster, multi-head monster season. Like, yeah, I think he could be in the conversation. But
he's not going
there
up
yet.
Against maybe the greatest quarterback of all time, probably having his best season or one of his best seasons. That's the whole point. Is Wentz and Brady are having unbelievably transcendent seasons that I think if we watch them week after week, and Brady maybe doesn't get the love because he's Tom Brady and you're used to it, like this is better than he's ever been. And yes, he's carrying them, but a lot of those sacks are on Russell Wilson. Their offense is constructed in a way where the point of it is for him to just run around and kind of make things up as they go. Like, they don't really run a normal offense. That's,
I feel like you've been nitpicking on Russell Wilson last
week. I mean, Russell Wilson is a total magician, so I can see why some people feel this way. Another option would be to be less attached to these postseason awards, which feel a little frivolous to begin with.
That's fair. It's a hot take. Maybe it has been nitpicking. And it shouldn't be about going against Russell Wilson because I think he's the third best player in the league, the third best quarterback. Like, he's having an incredible season. It's just recognizing that the other.
If he's the third best, then it's not crazy that a big chunk of people would see him as the MVP.
I think it is because the other two are so far and away having much better seasons. It's not just that their teams are better. It's that they're better on a week-to-week basis.
All right, Connie, you're up next.
All right, great job destroying that, by the way. I think that was
Totally destroyed.
There we go.
Chuck, take it easy, man. Take a vacation. Go live in the sea.
Yes, live in the sea?
Yeah, like on an island, not in the water.
That's the happy Chuck that the reporters are talking about right there. Gotcha.
Okay. My hot take I'm taking down right now. You know, I've been hearing.
Well, no, you're not taking it down.
Well, I'm destroying it. Yeah. Okay, the hot take that I am destroying right now is that Eagles head coach Doug Peterson is too much of a bro. I say he's just the right amount of bro. Okay? Like, you might have the wine and cheese crowd, the coastal elites out there who's saying, oh, no, like you and your visor and your flip-flops.
Hello.
What you're doing right now, it's
coastal
too much.
Coastal elites. Love it.
But real Americans like me know that it's just right. And I don't know if you guys heard the press conference yesterday from.
Yeah, I'm in the dark right now, and I'm happy.
Eagles head coach Doug Peterson, but let's take a listen in case you missed it.
Jeffrey said at the beginning of the year that a young quarterback, when he starts his first year, he learns what he learns. His second year, he makes a few more steps, but his third year and fourth year is when he kind of explodes. Have we seen maybe a premature explosion, or is there still an explosion?
rephrase. All right, let's regroup here.
Weird day for press conferences.
Premature explosion.
Wait, but he lost it again.
Yeah,
he couldn't get it together.
He takes another 20 seconds.
This is my favorite part about Doug Peterson, the fact that he did what all of us would have done if we were asked that question.
Yeah.
Marcus Hayes asked that, a premature explosion?
Right, my hot take is, this is on Marcus Hayes. I mean, how can you say that phrase?
Shout out to Marcus Hayes, I love it.
I mean, I feel like Belichick's not going to laugh, but it would be, and Marvin Lewis isn't going to laugh. There's a lot of people that wouldn't, but that's a tough one to handle.
Doug Peterson
that was special.
Could not get it together after that question.
It was a solid 45 seconds of just like silence and him laughing.
And the entire press room just broke out in laughter.
All right, so now just deconstructing a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Is there some type of opinion out there that he was too much of a bro there.
Too much of a bro. That was part of it. And that, you know, he needs to be more of a professional, and he shouldn't be laughing at
Who's
things like that.
Who's having this discussion?
There are a lot of people, many people out there are saying this, and I am saying that they are wrong.
I feel like Sean McVay is a little bro-y, and that's working out for the Rams. And with
bro-y.
Peterson, you spent half his career hanging out in a quarterback room with Brett Favre. I mean, it's just,
he's a hunting buddy. Right. He's a hunting buddy. Yeah.
Not to be like a Washington Post reporter or anything, but I'm just going to dig a little deeper.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
These people, are there any specific people you can mention that maybe said Doug Peterson too much of a bro?
John Ronald Gonzalez, born March 12, 1977, is an American sports writer who's married to NFL media broadcaster.
Oh, okay.
Wolf, John, who's a Pisces, resides in Los Angeles with his wife and two dogs.
John is a fan.
John specifically said that this was a conversation at the Ringer yesterday, that Doug Peterson was too much of a bro.
Ah.
So I'm destroying it.
There Results. You go. Now it's destroyed.
Yeah.
Results. Yeah. Sorry, Ringer.
All right. I'll go next. Good job, Connie.
Yeah.
Took that one down.
Totally.
Took down the whole Ringer office, too. Eat it, Ringer.
This is going to be great.
Okay. I am going to destroy the hot take that the Chiefs are done, that the Chiefs season is over. And I get it.
Wow.
Okay.
That's the Chiefs right there.
That's how it feels if you are a Chiefs fan right now, like you are burning to death. But the fact of the matter is the Chiefs are never as good as they were week 1 through 5, and they're not as bad as they have been from whatever it is, week 7 to week 12 or whatever it's been. Like, so I believe there will be a little course correction here. I think a lot of people, there's a sense now, a lot of people, the Ringer's talking about it, I'm sure. There's a sense that the Chiefs now are in a free fall, and that certainly could happen. But when I really take a step back, do you want to just be a slave to what's happening in the moment, or do you want to realize how these seasons go up and down like a roller coaster? And I think the head coach, who I trust, Andy Reid, to see them out of this, the quarterback, now do I think Patrick Mahomes maybe could help this team at this point, a shot in the arm? Yes, but also the West take that Alex Smith is having a great season on balance and to stick with him, that is probably the more prudent move right now. And let the veteran quarterback and the veteran coach and those good skill makers and Kareem Hunt to come out of his slump. It's certainly more possible to me that they get things straightened out and win 10 or 11 games rather than they end up going 6-10.
Oh, yeah.
So I am flaming that hot take that it's time to take the Chiefs out of consideration and not even to think about them. I'm not saying they're at the Patriots level or the Steelers level, but to now say, oh, but yeah, put everybody in there. Put the Ravens in there. Put the Bengals in there. Put the Chargers in there. Everybody calm down. The Chiefs aren't dead.
I'm with you because, A, they're winning a bad division. They're a game up. And
Chargers are coming up quick, though.
They are, but if you don't win the division, one of these teams, you're probably not going to be a wild card team. Who knows, though? But Kansas City, if you want to pick a team that has shown you that they can get out of a slump and, as you said, course correct, they'd be them. The definition of over, it's not. How far they're going to go this season, I don't
bring up the Chargers. A perfect example. I get it. Everyone loves the Chargers now, and they've been playing very well on both sides of the ball the last few weeks, but let's not now pencil them in to surge into January when the Chiefs are still in the picture.
Or use a pencil,
I'm
not a pen.
I'm penciling them in.
I'm very as a longtime Chargers homer on this podcast, really, that I've been wrong a million times about. Like, I'm uncomfortable with the idea that now, like, they're the favorites. Like, they're the expected team. Like, what could go wrong with a 5-6 Chargers team that's a game behind trying to get into the playoffs?
Right.
Yeah, like, just lock it up. And by
Chargers
the way,
win!
The Chiefs don't play a team with a winning record the rest of the season.
Well, what the heck is
so
happening
they at
to
least,
them?
They at least have a chance to beat bad teams like the Jets or the Broncos and win a couple,
at Jets,
a couple of those games.
Home against Raiders. Home against Chargers. Huge matchup in week 15. Home against Dolphins and then at Broncos. So that is a nice schedule.
They couldn't do anything against the Giants or the Bills.
If they stay at this level, they're going to be lucky to win one more game. I'm just saying I'm more confident that they find a way out of this funk.
I think people want them to be over with the way they're playing right now more than most people believe that. But I couldn't agree more with your take.
It's because the playoffs would be more fun with Chargers.
Right.
Like, we got to flex the Ravens out of the playoffs, too, I feel like.
Please.
That's the next movement. Hashtag flex Ravens.
Gonna get one of these.
Yeah, I guess you're gonna be stuck with
them. I'm not buying the Ravens at all.
Did that take get destroyed?
I think so.
I think you wiped it out.
Goodbye.
Let's do
it's out. It's
officially
destroyed. Mark.
All right.
Close us out. Destroy a take now.
How about this over? You see this everywhere on Twitter.
Chuck.
People think the NFL is free. People think the NFL is free of witchcraft. I see this everywhere on Twitter. This hot take is going down right now. Nonsense. I'm here to tell you that a 20-plus year dark magic curse has draped itself over the National Football League.
Wait, one sec. Mark is reading from a script. Whenever Mark's reading from a script, something's going to go down.
Well, so especially great. When it's two pages.
That's highlighted. Right. Highlighted.
Let's try to get through it, people.
Everyone get comfortable.
Right. Let's try to get through it. I'm going to have to go back here. Well, I have to tell you that there is a 20-plus year dark magic curse that has draped itself over the NFL, one that has brought a magical streak of happiness to Patriots fans who have come to believe they deserve it, and endless, insane heartbreak to Browns fans. Dan Hansis came closest to the truth by suggesting that Cleveland's football complex in Berea is built above an Indian burial ground.
Definitely is.
But it goes much deeper. I am preparing to release a 220-page report on this, but some basic bulleted details. 1. January 1st, 1995, Bill Belichick's Browns beat Bill Parcells' Patriots 20-13 in the AFC wildcard game. Remember that fact. Cleveland enters next season viewed as the AFC favorite for the Super Bowl. But 9 months later, Browns owner Art Modell announces the move to Baltimore. An annoyed Bill Belichick is summarily dismissed as Browns coach and immediately joins
Lindsay's
Bill Parcells in New England as assistant head coach of the Patriots. In 1996, the Browns no longer exist as a football team, spinning only in darkness. Months later, Parcells and Belichick go on to the Super Bowl 31 with the Patriots. Fast forward 3 seasons to 1999. The Browns return to the NFL to begin a run of failure unlike any suffered by any team in NFL history. Following that season, months later in the year 2000, Bill Belichick is named head coach of the Patriots. Months later, Belichick quietly drafts Tom Brady, a college backup. They win a Super Bowl 1 year later. Meanwhile, the Browns are already onto their second head coach and pondering a quarterback switch. This hexed inverse relationship between Cleveland and New England is only strengthened in 2002. Cleveland's only sad playoff appearance since their wild card win over the Patriots in 1995 comes, yes, in 2002, the year the Patriots surprisingly missed the playoffs. It is New England's overtime loss to the Dolphins in Week 17 that directly helps propel the Browns into the postseason. Since then, the Patriots have used one coach and one starting quarterback to author the greatest run in football history. Since then, the Browns have been the dictionary definition of the opposite, the yin and the yang, the dark and the light, shuffling through 75 head coaches and 196 quarterbacks. One inexplicable blip on the radar came when Eric Mangini, the man who came closest to revealing the evil secrets behind the Patriots' dark empire, took over as Cleveland's coach. In 2010, Mangenius authored one of the weirdest NFL results over the past decade, a 34-14 Browns romp over Brady and the Patriots. This unusual victory came on November 7th, 15 years earlier. The Browns' move was announced 24 hours previous on November 6th. The hex was nearly broken, but the Patriots and Belichick held strong. One final paradigm shift recently revealed itself. Cleveland's pursuit of Jimmy Garoppolo nearly came to fruition this past offseason when Jimmy G announced farewell to New England with a late-night Instagram post. The curse held strong, though, as the post was quickly and mysteriously erased, Jimmy G claiming that hackers posted it, and the trade didn't happen, not until Belichick intentionally prevented Garoppolo from going to its inverse identity, Cleveland, New England's polar opposite, instead shipping the prize quarterback to San Francisco. Hope you've enjoyed it, Patriots fans.
Whoa. Watching your faces during that was really funny.
That's
really
just
great.
The beginning of it.
It goes deeper than that?
Oh, yeah.
What? All right. What is...
When is this report being released?
So, wait. There was witchcraft, but then sometimes the Browns win over the Patriots. How is that related to the witchcraft?
They came close. There have been struggles to reverse this witchcraft. And
Where was the proof of the witchcraft, though?
Mangini, who knew about, who understands how New England operates behind the scene and came very close to bringing that whole thing down, became Cleveland's head coach and up against New England, had a chance to reverse it all, destroys New England. Romeo Crennel was always on the outside. Little too happy-go-lucky. And New England loses that game to Cleveland. What do? They rip off 10 straight wins to end the season or something like that.
So the hot take destroyed is that the NFL is free of witchcraft.
Yes, and it is not.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go.
I mean,
I guess that was destroyed.
I have no counter argument.
Are they talking about that at the Ringer too? We should bug the Ringer office. You know how they like would, in Watergate, didn't they bug?
Yes,
or Nixon used to bug the White House.
He also had his phone calls recorded, which that was his undoing.
They broke into the Watergate building.
I don't even know why we would need to bug the Ringer's office.
Yeah,
but let's do it.
Nor do I.
Maybe that's where the witchcraft is coming from.
The Ringer is how many years old? 4, 5?
It's pretty new.
Several, a couple years old.
So, no, I think that's newer. This is
could
this,
just be its
this
new
dates
home.
Back to the witchcraft of the mid-90s, which I don't approve of.
But you know who works or
the movie
on the Ringer is Michael Lombardi.
Yes. Oh,
there's a connection.
Mark, you have thoughts
there you
on
go, Lindsay.
Lombardi.
Connect the dots.
He was a former Browns employee, such as was your dad, Lindsay.
I used to work with Mike Lombardi in
Philly. I'm still struggling to see where the kernels of the
Greg, as a Patriots fan, I understand why you're going to be the stronghold of doubt and refusing to believe anything beyond the facts here.
Mm. So you're basically taking down Greg. Well, in this.
As always.
No, not at all. I think the
peel
Patriots
back the layers
fans
of the onion.
Patriots fans simply believe this. Oh, it's like how many times have we cited Belichick's genius on the show already before my statement? 5, 6 today? It's all assumed that it's Belichick and everything's perfect.
But for 2002, it just sort of stopped for a minute for some reason.
There's attempts to reverse it.
Yeah.
Attempts to reverse it. Things almost become undone and then they get spin back if
mysterious.
It's not strong enough.
There you go. 4 for 4. Hot takes debunked.
Done.
Maybe.
Destroyed. Yeah! Very powerful. Very powerful. Very painful. For the people that held those hot takes close to their heart because they no longer exist. All right. Real quick. Thursday night football preview. Guess what it is?
What?
It's the Shoulders of Greatness.
No!
Presented by Head & Shoulders. Thursday night football. The Cowboys at Redskins. Mark, I want to call this a loser goes home match, but we just did that with the Cowboys and Chargers last Thursday. So is this just a loser match?
Where Shoulders of mediocrity.
Oof.
I mean, I think the one thing that we probably agree on is that I wish the Redskins were in the AFC. Because I think they could get a playoff spot. They're still fun to watch, in my opinion. The Cowboys, they've really statistically and just, you know, in terms of the eye test, have spun completely out of control since Ezekiel Elliott left the building. And they had Tyron Smith last week. It didn't really make much of a difference in terms of their passing game, their offensive production, and any chance to think that they're going to go on some sort of a streak to save their season, in my book.
Yeah, I mean, we saw in that game Zach Martin go down too on the offensive line. We knew that they were sort of struggling already, but he's practicing now, so that's good. We know I don't think Sean Lee is going to play in this game, but on the defensive side of things. But Anthony Hitchens is expected to practice a little bit. I mean, their defense is so banged up right now, so if they don't have Hitchens out there either, that could be a major problem.
They've been part of the problem. Teams are keeping the Cowboys defense on the field a long time, kind of using the Cowboys approach, how they use to beat teams where they're just loading up on long drives, time of possession. That's exactly what the Redskins do well. And the Redskins defense have been playing better lately. Junior Gallette is playing really well the last 3 or 4 weeks in the pass rush. And you have him, you have Kerrigan, you have a really good cornerback group, and it's not a good matchup for Dak Prescott and Dez Bryant, who are struggling to get anything done. Mm-hmm.
They're both 5-6, both teams, so they're not technically out of it.
I think the Redskins, it would be kind of crazy if they won 6 straight to go to the playoffs, but crazier things have happened, including in Washington.
Don't
I mean, you could win out and still miss the playoffs at 10-6 in the NFC, but you certainly can't lose again. So from that through that prism, this game still has some meaning, and it's going to be a desperation affair on both sides. So I think there could be some juice in this game, and I am interested to see now that the Dak Prescott has really eaten some humble pie for a few weeks, how he reacts in this game. And I think it's going to be a good game. Yeah. I got a good feeling about this Thursday night.
I think Samaje Perine, I mean, he's coming off a big game, and I think it was back-to-back 100-yard game he had, and he'll be able to run
Sammy
this
P.
one too.
Sammy P. I think this is a big 5 weeks for Dez Bryant. I think Dez Bryant's a huge part of the problem in Dallas. He's not coming up down with those 50-50 balls. He's getting paid like a superstar. I think
something like.
I think 15, it's a big 5 weeks 15, for Jason Garrett.
$15, $16 million or something this year, and I think he's due 13. I think Dez has hurt their team. Like, I think they might have been a better team literally if Dez Bryant wasn't on the team. And I think they have to think about that going into next year. And I think how he finishes off this season is going to have a big impact.
Yes, and Dez hurting the team. It's also the Cowboys failing to develop another receiver to let him maybe slide into a more, maybe a number two role if that's where he's at in his career now. They just don't have, another big guy on the outside to kind of slide into that role. Maybe. I mean, he could go. I think, Mark, you're making a good point. I think Jason Garrett, they need to finish the season out.
Yeah.
Well,
especially with all the players
kind of Teflon there.
Frustrated with the lack of coaching, like with the lack of scheme changes and adjustments, too. That's a big deal.
Oh, pick the game.
I'm going Skins.
I'm going Redskins.
I can't pick the Cowboys the way they look right now. Got to go
Skins. Redskins, although I think Dallas, because they practiced on Sunday. I think they're trying to make this a different type of week. 27-24 Washington.
Woo!
They are they, both these teams are in the rare Thursday back to back, so they're in that strange sort of like their whole life.
Well, and so Cousins is 1-9 now on weekdays in his career, and just won a game on Thursday, and now plays on Thursday again. How many quarterbacks get off an 0-9 weekday schneid by winning two straight Thursday games? I don't think that's ever happened in NFL history.
Is this witchcraft?
I think there's probably never been an 0-9 weekday schneid that's ever been broken either.
You're right, Connie Fox. That is more NFL witchcraft.
Yeah.
I'm convinced now.
That is some shoulders of greatness.
Sort of greatness.
Presented by Head & Shoulders. All right, before we go... yes, Mark, I'm going to throw it to you because, of course, last month you found an abandoned kitten in your yard named Boo.
Boo
did not make it. Mm. But Mom kept the old irresponsible mom, hag that she is, kept showing up and birthed more cats.
Well, okay.
So let's start there. And I'll throw it to you.
They were probably part of the same.
Yeah, exactly. If you're on the video show, you can see one of them.
I don't know. More.
Is this one the one that's this not Boo?
This is a new cat.
A couple more.
Oh my god! How cute!
Yeah. So three cats we found in a little alleyway, fenced in part behind our house. And the mother, I think that the way that cats work, feral cats, is that the mom will abandon one that's just simply not fit to live. And I think the Boo was in that category. That's what we were told by a shelter. So the mom has come back and fed these, and these cats are getting stronger by the day. And we still have to find a way to get them to safety beyond our home. But in terms of
you're
Boo,
allergic or else you,
I'm deathly allergic. Like that's
it's
the thing.
Become
I woke
an
up,
issue in the house.
Yes, it's like it's not our house is not a rescue.
Are they in the house?
What's the
no?
Problem?
But they're like their little kitty dander, or whatever, is floating in through windows, and like I woke up with like my left eye shut.
Well, you have two eyes.
Yeah, that's what Simone said. So here's the thing, though.
Your sons and your wife are not, like, very supportive.
Colton literally asked if we could trade Daddy for Boo when Boo is still alive, which I tried not to take offense to. But I will say this. Because Boo passed away and before we found the cats, our producer, Lindsay, had a great idea. And, Lindsay, why don't I let you talk about it?
So we thought that we would take a sad situation and turn it into a little bit more of a positive one. So we started a GoFundMe campaign, and it's actually, if you go to GoFundMe.com/ATNCat, nice and easy to remember, you could donate to that, and all of the funds from that will go to the Karma Rescue. They found us a cat to sponsor, and his name is Jerry.
Jerry!
That's, if you're on the video show again, that's a picture of Jerry. That's the cat we are sponsoring.
It's a solid cat.
Yeah, and we can
very
put
nice
that
looking
on social
cat.
Media, too. So
is Jerry drooling?
No, I think that's his fangs.
He's rabid.
He's got an overbite with fangs.
Oh, no. Yeah.
He's not rabid, for the record. That was a joke.
So what?
Perfectly healthy.
GoFundMe.com/ATN.
Do it. Donate.
Yeah, and we'll tweet this out as well. But, we'd like to help them out. And maybe they could help us take these three cats in my yard, too.
Yeah, that would be good. Because life, it really depends.
Give and take, baby.
Gotta go.
All right, I thought you were
almost
saying.
Did it. We made it. I know, it's 11:30.
No, you don't let her go.
I've already
all right.
Made it.
That's it.
We made it.
That's it for Tuesday's show. Yes, this is the video show. So just a reminder that this evening, if you go to NFL.com/ATN video, beginning at 6 p.m. Pacific, which is 9 p.m. Eastern, which is go figure it out overseas, you could check out this show and all the fun that we had today. Also, a reminder that NFL Pick'em on NFL Network airs on Saturdays at 8 a.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Eastern, and 11 p.m. Eastern, and then Sunday morning, right before Colleen's game day morning show, 6 a.m. Eastern. So that's the show. Thank you, everyone, for following along. This is Dan Hansa signing off for A Quiet Storm. Connie Fox, the old boss, Lindsay Fulton, and Christian Anderson behind the glass. Thanks for the help, as always. Till Thursday.